so much alike. We don't
want to. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. Thank you for those of you who have been here. Thank you for your patience. At this point, Carla will take up item number 91.
Proclaim February 2019 to be Black History Month.
I'd like to welcome everybody to Portland City Hall. And I'd like to start off our presentation today by introducing Irene Marion from Equity and Inclusion in the Portland Bureau of Transportation. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you so much for having us today here to celebrate Black History Month. My name is Irene Marion, and I work at the Portland Bureau of Transportation as the Equity and Inclusion Manager. And I'm here today representing the CAN Network, the City African American Network. We are an affinity group of the DEEP employees, so the diverse and empowered employees of Portland. And we represent the 820 current Black employees that work across the city. We appreciate having easy access to information about our demographics. I was actually on the OEHR website today where I was poking around and kind of learning a little bit more about us. So I want to walk you through the materials that we just distributed to you so that you can kind of follow us along on our journey today. So the City African American Network, again, we are an affinity group of staff. Our work is really to connect the Black employees across the city and to help empower them professionally so that they can not only be retained here as city employees, but really make it up through the ranks. So the first material that I want to point out to you is, again, from the OEHR website.
Office of Equity and Human Rights.
Office of Equity and Human Rights. Thank you, Commissioner. So there is an employee demographics dashboard, and what I've put before you is information about the Black employees across the city. It's interesting to kind of look at this information to see how the staff is scattered across the city, what types of positions we represent, how we are making our way through the ranks of the city, how many of us are veterans, how many of us are disabled, our age, and also the increases in Black employees across the city over time are on the back page. So I just want to flag that because we represent all these folks. We don't talk to them or see them every day, but we represent their interests, and we definitely encourage you through your work with your bureaus to be connected with them as well. So today we are here. This is one of the types of programs that we host. We actually host monthly meetups with Black employees across the city. We call that the Never Eat Alone meetup, where we meet monthly, mostly at the Housing Bureau, just to connect and talk about different things that we are dealing with as city employees, but also just to have social engagement as well. During Black History Month, we host usually a series of events. So last year, we had a really great series of events and appreciated all of your support. This year, we have 5 events that we are coordinating, and I'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of today. And then on Juneteenth, you can also expect to see us back for hopefully another proclamation on Juneteenth and to have another series of events. So I'm here to introduce our Black History Month theme and then kick it over to a couple other CAN Network members. So this year's Black History Month theme is set by the Association for the Study of African American Life and History. And their established theme this month is Black Migrations. What they're looking to do is really focus on the story of how Black people have migrated to America, how we migrate around the country. And for us here today, we want to share some stories about how we are migrating around the Portland region. So I'm excited because we have a panel of really cool youth that have come from different Black organizations and networks across the area. They're going to talk about their Black migration stories, and they're also going to pose a question to you. So we have a couple of those in our run of show packet for you here today, but they will present them as they share their Black migration story. And with that, I will kick it over to Kim McCarthy, who will introduce our first speaker.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Kim McCarty with the Portland Housing Bureau, and I'm really pleased to introduce our young leaders here today. They're going to talk about their migration stories. To start off, we have Taji Chisamet. Chazi is 17-year-old and a junior at DeSalle North Catholic High School. Taji has been active in civic engagement and leadership since middle school. Taji currently sits on the Multnomah Youth Commission. Over the past year, Taji has founded a nonprofit called Youth Educating Police that works with the Portland Police Bureau to sustain youth involvement in the training process and to have strong investment in building relationships between police and youth. Taji believes in uplifting and empowering all minority groups and does so in intersectional frameworks to guide his work. Thank you for coming, and let's hear his remarks.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Commissioners and Ms. Ted Wheeler, or Mayor Wheeler, my bad. My name is Taji Chesmet, and I'm here to give you my opinion on the state of Black America. I'm a first-generation son to a Kenyan immigrant. My father came to America seeking educational opportunity, and his journey was similar to millions others who since have then have come to America for economic hope, political relief, and educational fortuity. Today, we are lost in a perilous and scary fight for a future built on multiculturalism and acceptance. The issue of Black migration isn't in the limelight. However, more close to home, there is something very pervasive in our own neighborhoods, gentrification. I moved to this city about 7 years ago. I lived in New Columbia, North Portland, where I discovered my identity as a Black man. Nowhere else would I have found such a salient culture, a culture that is on the brink of extinction. See, the state of Black America begins where I call home, Portland. As of now, I live in this gray area of Portland called Bethany, and I feel as if I'm looking into Portland through a window. This conversation and issue of housing has never been more apparent and is certainly at an apex. Despite the attempts of our administration to renounce refugees and immigration, Portland deserves to be a city of acceptance and inclusion. This practice begets nativism, and I do not want wealth to be the end of our culture and our people in Portland, and I feel as if my story and experience is not singular in that way. However, I have spoken to friends and peers who have claimed that gentrification is not a bad thing and we should see it as a tool. Such an arrogant statement perpetuates the experiences of those who can no longer call Portland their home. I sit here today and ask you to recognize those stories and see how Portland can play a role in uplifting those voices. Over the last summer, I had the opportunity to collaborate on the Black Male Achievement Summer Cohort for the second year in a row. This specific year, we focused on Black-owned businesses and Black space, and that work in specific forced me to further question the accountability of people in power. And this leads me to my question of, as city council members, what is your vision and what are your goals as how you can improve outcomes for Black communities in Portland? And what is your plan for reaching those goals? See, this question does not have to do with work already done, but rather the future initiatives in areas of our voice, community, housing, and safety, all values and principles that City of Portland holds. Thank you.
Thank you. How would you like us to go about responding to the question?
I believe the response is going to be after the other stories were told. I just have to step, so I want to make sure my question was asked.
We'll take our lead from you on how you'd
Thank
prefer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Taji. Taji has to leave, but as he said, we'll restate the questions, and we're really looking, all of the youth are looking forward to your responses.
Great. Taji, thank you very much for
I'd like to recognize Taji as perhaps the youngest member of the very thrilling Office of Community and Civic Life Code Change Committee. I'm so impressed with all the youth who are involved with Multnomah Youth Commission. I have a special fondness for Taji, and just anyone willing to serve on that committee gets props from me. Thanks for being here, Taji.
Thank you. Our next presenter is Miriam.
The green button should be lit if you press that.
Yeah, thank you. Miriam Admasu is an Ethiopian-American who was born and raised in Northeast Portland. She is currently pursuing her master's in social work at Portland State University while working at Central City Concern as the Associate Director of Equity and Inclusion. One thing that she would like people to know about her is equity and inclusion are not buzzwords or check marks in the work that she does. It's a plan of action that consists of breaking down barriers, feeling uncomfortable, and shifting the norm.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioner. When I think about Black migration, so many things come to me based on my personal experience and my vicarious experiences. When I narrowed it down to my immediate family's experience, I landed on the story of my parents coming to America. In 1984, my dad fled Ethiopia into Kenya as a refugee in hopes of a better life. 3 years later, my mom joined him in Kenya, and they got married. Shortly after, my mom became pregnant with my brother, and they found a family who would sponsor them in a small town called The Dalles, Oregon. In November 1988, my parents arrived in Oregon, and my mom was 8 months pregnant at the time. When they arrived, they had no idea about the racist history of Oregon, but they did learn quickly. Not even a week after their arrival, they were met with the horrific news about the murder of Mulugeta Serrao. If you don't know, Mulugeta Serrao was a 28-year-old Ethiopian immigrant who was beaten to death by white supremacists off the corner of 31st and Pine, right here in Portland, Oregon. That wasn't the welcome they were expecting when they envisioned their American dream. When I take a step back from my family's migration experience, Black migration can mean many different things. Although my family came from Ethiopia on a plane, I'm not ignorant to Black migration that's been met with racism, exclusion, and trauma. Let's think about the transatlantic slave trade. I consider that to be called stealing and selling of human beings. But that was a large population of Africans who were enslaved and brought to America. Then there's the Great Migration, which is when more than 6 million Black people migrated from the South to the North, Midwest, and West between 1916 and 1970. Then, if we really zoom in, we'll see the history of Black migration to Oregon. This history, one filled with hate, exclusion, and systemic racism, continues to impact the Black community in Portland today. From the Golden West Hotel, to Vanport, to North and Northeast Portland, when I think about Black migration to Portland, I think about families that have been torn apart, people and businesses that have been displaced, and communities that have been traumatized. But then I think about it again, and that's not Black migration, that's gentrification. Black migration can mean many things to many different people, but when I try to wrap my head around it, the one thing that I do know is Black migration means resilience, dedication, and the strength to keep pushing forward. Thank you.
I'd like to introduce our next speaker. Jamarti Brown is 23-year-old and from Northeast Portland and attended Jefferson High School. In December, he just graduated from Peru State University in Peru, Nebraska. He just recently signed an IFL, indoor football league contract to play football and is leaving tomorrow to be stationed in North Dakota and traveling around the country playing. He'll share his question with you. Do you want me to read it? Or? How are we going to improve our city's gentrification without moving the Black and brown out further?
Appreciate the introduction. Just like you said before, I'm a native of Northeast Portland. My family came out here from the South. My great-grandfather came from, on my dad's side, he came from World War II and moved out here from Mississippi. And then my other side, my mom's side of the family came from Little Rock in Oklahoma. I mean, that was earlier, in the earlier years. you know, when black migration was real, real big coming from down south, and also, you know, dealing with, you know, the grandparents and the great-grandparents dealing with the World War II war. And, you know, I grew up all around this area. I attended Woodlawn Elementary as an elementary kid, went to SEI Academy, which is a self-enhancement nonprofit organization that some of you guys might be familiar with. And then I attended Jefferson High School. And it's been a journey seeing how the city has transferred, you know, just the different ways and the different outlets, you know, that different communities have made it. My grandma stayed on Kirby Emerson as we speak right now, and right across the street and three houses down, I think it would be $500,000 homes. But not only, but there wasn't the original homes. They've been torn down and, you know, building new homes. And not saying that's a bad thing, but what happens when we have to move all the way out to 122nd and 148th, 162nd, and so forth and so on. And so one of the main things that I feel like, you know, that being a part of the black community is we have to understand that we have a voice, you know, and we just as important as anybody else. And it's not just about the black community. It's about all people as well. So I want to make that real clear. But just the whole migration piece, it's been a journey. And I think I've been very fortunate to have, you know, older individuals that kind of educated me about how it was in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s. Ben and I'm a 90s baby. Born in 95, you know, I was born right into, you know, the gang epidemic, you know, the whole epidemic of that era, and then the early 2000s. And so, you know, it's just, I feel like we up here as the young folks in the community, we have a voice, and I think we all, you know, we should be heard. And it's a, you know, we just ready for change, and change in the right way.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jamarte. Our next speaker is Malia Forney. She's a 25-year-old sociology student at Portland Community College and currently works at Mount Scott Community Center. She is originally from Indiana, but moved to Portland about a year and a half ago from Atlanta, Georgia. At PCC's Southeast Campus, she is the club coordinator for the Black Student Union and an active member of the Black community of Portland.
Thank you all for having me. Thank you to the commissioners and the mayor today. Like she said, I am originally from Indiana. After going to Indiana University about 7 years ago, decided it wasn't the environment for me, and I moved to Washington, D.C., where I served as an AmeriCorps member, doing 10 months of service. After my time in Washington, D.C., I moved to Atlanta, Georgia, where I worked at the Martin Luther King Jr. National Historic Site. I learned all about the history of our people and the strength and the resilience in our communities. I learned for the first time about the richest black neighborhood in the world, Auburn Avenue, and I was captivated. So moving here to Portland about a year and a half ago was almost a 180. And so I've learned a lot about this city, especially being a sociology major, going to PCC, which has fantastic teachers, fantastic educators, and being a part of the black community of Portland, which strives to bring black people to the resources that are here in this community. It's been very welcoming as a person who hasn't grown up here in this city, as a black person who has not connected to the gentrification in the same way that people have been affected. It's been welcoming being here, but one of the things that I've learned is that a lot of black people move because they say there aren't enough black people here, and so therefore they move. And so the black population here is decreasing every year. So one of the questions that I had was, what does the city plan to do to make black people feel more comfortable in this city and enjoy being mentally strong here and economically strong as well?
Thank you, Malia. Our last presenter is Soraya Sims. She's a junior at Reynolds High School and is classically trained cellist. She's a straight-A student, BSU president, Delta Gem, and a member of the National Honor Society. During the spring, Soraya plays softball for her school. She's also a dancer, actress, and appeared in both local and national print ads and commercials and has performed on stage since the age of 4. She's interested in everything from fashion to law and is looking to attend her dream college, Columbia University, after graduation. Welcome.
Thank you for having me. My name is Sayera Sims, as she stated. My story of my family's journey to Oregon starts with my great-great-grandmother, Dorothy, who moved from Texas to come and work on the shipyards in Vanport. They were later moved into redlined communities after the flood, and my family has been in Portland ever since. My grandma had my mother, who was born and raised in Portland, and my mother had me, who was born and raised in Portland, Oregon. We were then moved out into the eastern community, where I have basically grown up since I was a little girl. And most of my story starts with education, because that's all I've known since I've been in school, since preschool. So education in the eastern community is very difficult for African Americans, especially those who have been moved out from because of causes of gentrification. So we often don't have the same resources as other peoples have, and educators aren't prepared to deal with African Americans who move out that way. What I have a question about is what are you doing now to make resources and politics more accessible to African American youths in today?
Good.
Thank you, everyone. I want to introduce C.J. Robbins from the Office of Equity and Human Rights. He's going to facilitate a conversation between our young leaders and our mayor and the commissioners. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Excellent.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, commissioners. And Mayor Wheeler, thank you for the opportunity to have our young folks speak on some topics that are close to their heart and important to our community. I coordinate black male achievement efforts, as was shared, out of the Office of Equity and Human Rights. And the way I see it, we had 5 questions and we have 4 commissioners. So if we can have, and the mayor, three commissioners and the mayor.
He's commissioner
as well. I'm still a commissioner.
Right?
Yeah. I just get more grief. It's just
so what I would like to see is have each of our young folks reiterate their question, and those that didn't get a chance to ask their question, ask. And then I will leave it up to you all who responds to each question. I will remind the commissioners specifically, we only have about 15 minutes for response.
So
this is an invitation to a much longer conversation with these young leaders from our community. So, speaking as well to how they can engage in that broader conversation and join in ways like Taji is engaged with the Office of Civic and Community Life, right? So with that, we'll start here.
Sounds good. Mm-hmm. So my question today is, as we know, houseless youth of color and LGBTQIA plus youth are disproportionately affected by houselessness in Multnomah County. In addition to the services we provide that are specific to the LGBTQIA plus youth in the homeless youth continuum, what efforts are being made to provide culturally specific services for black youth and youth of color in the homeless youth continuum?
I'll go ahead and take a first swing at that. First of all, just so we don't claim credit for other people's work, Multnomah County manages the homeless youth continuum, but obviously we're huge supporters of the overall homeless services network through the Joint Office of Homeless Services between the city and the county. Of course, there are significant culturally specific service providers We recently had the Q Center give a really good presentation here at City Council. We've been very supportive of Outside In, New Avenues for Youth, Janice Youth Services, and others. Our own strategies around housing focus specifically on the needs of the African-American community and lower-income communities. Cupid Alexander, who's sitting behind you, runs the housing services for the mayoral administration. We've been focusing on a couple of very specific projects, the North-Northeast Housing Strategy, which includes what's called a preference policy designed to ensure that families who were impacted by previous development and gentrification are at the top of the list in terms of being able to return to the community and take advantage of the affordable housing that's being created by the city of Portland. And that is largely a community-driven process. Similarly, since we're talking about gentrification, the Hill Block over near Legacy, that Hill Block was taken away from a historically black neighborhood under the guise of urban renewal with the expectation that it would be developed. The black families' homes were demolished and no development ever took place. So that's been a very, very sore spot for the black community here in the city of Portland for a long time. We have a community-driven process to work with the city and Legacy to talk about the redevelopment, how that redevelopment is actually going to take place. So it is a community-centric effort to actually engage. So from my perspective, those are some of the tangible ways that we're getting results.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Just really quickly, Mayor, what are some ways that Miriam could join in some of those efforts that you mentioned or have her voice reflected?
We'd love to have her voice reflected. And the best advice I can give you, Miriam, before you leave, make sure you connect with Cupid sitting right behind you, and we'll get you plugged in. We'd love to have your perspective on it. Thank you.
Before you go on, I just want to call dibs on Ms. Sims' question.
I didn't know we could do that.
CJ didn't say we could do that.
Just like I stated before, this is how we all stated before about the gentrification. One of the big things that I feel like was one of the big things in gentrification was when a lot of black families are offered a lot of money for their home, they sell it for other reasons, financial problems, may have children that have needs, going to college, stuff like that. So somebody knocks on your door and offer you $100,000, $200,000 for your house. And your money, cash or whatever, whatever the money part is. And in your mind, you're thinking about your family. What can this money do for me and my family in the long run? Now, whatever they do with that money is up to them. But, that's a lot of money to deal with when you're coming from nothing. So I just want to kind of make that very clear as far as when you get offered a lot of money for your home and you need the money, especially if you come from a big family, then the money is kind of like the motivation. Like, okay, we'll move out wherever we got to go because this money is going to help us. But, back to the gentrification part, my question was, how can we improve the gentrification without moving to black and brown? I know you just, kind of stated a little bit about that. But since gentrification already kind of happened and people already been in their communities out in Southeast Portland or wherever for probably quite some time now, how do we keep improving that in a way where, not in the sense of moving back to the North and Northeast, but how can we still just improve that without moving the people that's currently still in the North and Northeast out?
Jim Marti, I want to try to answer your question. And first, let me just say congratulations on being a black young man from inner Northeast who is gone to college and is on your way. You had a good support system, because none of us do it without a very good support system. So congratulate you for what you've done and what you will do for your community. In regard to your question, you spoke truly from your heart when you talked about somebody knocking on your door offering you $100,000 or $200,000 for your home. And unfortunately, that happens to a lot of black families, right? Because if you bought the home 30 years ago, you paid $25,000 or $35,000 for it, this looks like a windfall, right? Mm-hmm. Until you go and try to buy something with that $100,000 or $200,000 that they offered you, right? And what you find is you can't buy anything for the little bit of money that they offered, right? I would love to see the city of Portland develop a financial literacy program where we could help homeowners understand the value of the homes that they have, so that they're not falling prey to predatory scheme artists who want to come and just like offer you pennies on a dollar and then turn around and put a little paint on it and sell it for four times as much, right? Mm-hmm. That happens over and over and over again, especially in communities with limited financial literacy. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. There are a lot of black and brown people no longer live in inner Northeast, so for those who want to come back, are more power to them. But the other ones who now live in East Portland and are making home in East Portland and in Gresham and all the other places that they're making their home, we have an obligation to make sure they can build community where they are. We should not be trying to tell people they have to go back to something that just, quite frankly, doesn't exist anymore, right? Mm-hmm. So having people come back to something that's just a dream of what used to be, is not what we want to do, right? We have to build towards the future. And so in my mind, that means let's stake a claim in East Portland, right? I think Gateway is a great opportunity for us to stake a claim and say, okay, we're going to have a black neighborhood here. Let's make this happen, right? But we need young people to show up, like not just on Black History Month, but actually show up on a regular basis, making sure that your voice is heard. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. I also wanted to ask the same question, and I'll just reiterate it, as it'll go for all of the commissioners. How can Jamarte join in some of the efforts that you mentioned there as a young leader from our community?
Well, I can tell you that in my office, Matt McNally is my, they make me call him a community coordinator or outreach something or other, whatever the city term is for that, right? But he's an organizer, right? And so if you've got some young people that want to actually work together and vision what it looks like in East Portland today, connect with my office, ask for Matt. He'll help you make that happen. And quite frankly, anything I'm involved in, young people are involved in. So it's like, it's not an extra thing. It's just how we roll.
Thank you. So to Malia for your question, please.
Thank you. So my question has kind of been answered a little bit, but I kind of want to open it up a little bit more. So as someone, like I said, who hasn't been here very long, and when you do a Google search of Portland, the first thing that comes up is whitest city in America. And a lot of Portlanders know that, and they seem kind of ashamed of it. And so I often ask people, so what do you think we should do to make people want to be in Portland? Because the black population is slowly decreasing every single year. And I did a little bit of research and found out in 2015, I think that was the earliest that I could find, was the Diversity and Civic Leadership Program. And I'm not sure if it's still a part of the city's initiatives, but essentially it had this idea to make black people feel more comfortable here, but that program is no longer there. So does the city have any initiatives to increase that program, continue it, or start something new?
Are you talking about the DCL's?
The DCL okay. Program. Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna take a stab at this because this is my question. So, yes, we still have that program, actually, DCLs. It's under the office formerly known as Office of Neighborhood Involvement. It's now called the Office of Community and Civic Engagement. It was originally created to support Portland's neighborhood association system, and that system tends to be dominated by older, more affluent white homeowners. And for the I don't know how many several years. I've only been here 2 years. ONI really took on a broader and broader scope. And so the DCLs were part of that in recognition, especially during a time of mass displacement of communities of color, that community in Portland is no longer geographically based, mm-hmm. and that we needed to better serve culturally specific groups. So that is where the DCL program came from. And it is resources and training for different communities of color through our community partners for advocacy and getting into leadership roles. Am I forgetting part of your question? You asked about DCLs, but I thought it was a gentrification.
Yeah, I just was wondering how much support the city is giving that program and if they plan on, like, expanding that.
Oh, well, thank you for raising that issue. That's actually my bureau. We can always use more financial resources. I will say that I believe that Portland is a progressive city that doesn't know how to achieve its progressive ideals, and especially in the realm of past harm done to communities of color through racist public policy. And I do believe, although it's fair to criticize equity as a buzzword and something that people are paying lip service to, that we are making meaningful progress toward remedies. I don't think that we can ever make up for what happened, but we can start where we are now. And, I mean, gentrification is a great example. Gentrification is not a natural, unstoppable phenomenon. We got to where we are today by design, and we need to get out of where we are today by design. And that means reversing harmful policies and creating remedies. So I'm really committed to tenant protections. That's a big focus of my office. And trying to keep people in their housing that they're in to stem that tide of gentrification and displacement. I've also asked the office, I always forget what OMF stands for. Office of Management and Finance, to look at the anti-displacement measures that we adopted in our comp 2035 comp plan, because it's all well and good to say that we've adopted these anti-displacement measures, but unless someone's holding us accountable for them, they may not happen. And so OMF is creating a bureau-wide or a multi-bureau approach to making sure that the bureaus with the most impact, housing, transportation, are sticking to those commitments. I could go on and on, but I'm pretty sure we're about to run out of time, so I'm going to stop. But I welcome you to talk to my staff. If you're interested in anything that Civic Life is doing, we can get you connected there. There are lots of opportunities for people to get involved on a volunteer basis. There's also intern opportunities, but it's also great to have lots of pressure from advocates on the outside. Not everyone has to get involved on this side.
Thank you.
All right, and with that, to Sayara, did I pronounce your name correctly?
Sayara,
thank you.
Okay, so we all spoke a little bit about gentrification, but with that being said, what resources are you providing for African American youth and African Americans in general to those that have already been pushed out towards the east because of gentrification?
And your question also asked about the engagement in politics, right?
Yes.
So that was why I dived in and reserved the opportunity to respond to that, because we're just starting the Open and Accountable Elections Program, which is a matching fund for citywide campaigns. Thank you. And that means that future candidates for mayor, city council, auditor won't be dependent on big money donors, because as a small donation is going to be matched by city dollars. So a $50 donation will get $300 added by the city to make it a $50 donation turn into $350. And that will mean that there'll be more candidates campaigning in East Portland, asking people to house parties to give their opinions and to give their $10, $50, whatever. And remember, you can get a $50 tax credit. So essentially, you're just... lending the money until you get your tax refund from the state. So, and that means that there'll be much more opportunity for people to run and be successful. Commissioner Hardesty just got elected from East Portland. So Commissioner Hardesty, Commissioner Udaly, and I all ran small money donation campaigns. We're going to be involved in doing some of the trainings which are coming up. And I would say, anticipating CJ's question, how young people can get involved if you're not yet old enough to be a candidate. One of the best ways to prepare to be a candidate is to volunteer on a campaign. And so we're going to be having trainings about how to use this program. It's a program where there are a number of rules about what you're allowed to accept in donations, who you can get them from, and how you can spend the money. So it's not quite as simple as I outlined it earlier, but it is something that an intelligent high school student could certainly help a candidate win. And then also, I want you to know about there's a program called New Leadership Oregon at Portland State University. You don't have to go to Portland State University to go to it. And it's a summer program that prepares particularly young women of color to be candidates and leaders in our community. And so I encourage you to look into whether that might be available. Does that answer your question, Sam?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. If you'd like to get more information about the Open and Accountable Elections Program, just contact Yesenia Carrillo in my staff, who is my constituent services specialist. She'd be happy to tell you more about it.
All right, thank you all. We have one more question, which was Taji's, which he read, but I will restate. It's the bonus round. I will let you all, again, I'll let you all mediate how you choose. Taji's question is, as city council members, what is your vision and what are your goals as to how you can improve outcomes for black communities in Portland? And what is your plan for reaching these goals? This question does not have to do with work already done, but rather the future initiatives in areas of our voice, community, housing, and safety, all values that this city boasts quite proudly.
I've got one quick answer, in that we just hired Dr. Markeisha Smith to lead the Office of Equity and Human Rights. She's an African-American who's been in Oregon since 2011. She's got a lot of experience in education and in equity work. And so part of really what we need to do is to appoint people to the highest positions who can guide the work, help the council understand what we need to do. And so that's one example of something that CJ will be working with Dr. Smith, because it's the Office of Equity and Human Rights.
I will simply add that it took 147 years to get an African-American woman to sit in the seat that I'm sitting in.
Well, it's because there is somebody there now, not that it took 147 years to do so. I just think it's interesting when people applaud that, because it's actually appalling that it took so long.
And that is absolutely my point. I mean, when I've been out in public and people applaud being the first African-American woman to sit on the city council, I remind them that is not something to celebrate. We should be ashamed, because it's not that I'm more talented than any other African-American woman who's ever come in front of the city before me. It's not that I had big friends with big money that allowed me to be able to run and serve in public office. It is that nobody works harder than I do. No one, right? That was amazing. And so I say that, and I agree absolutely with Commissioner Fritz. I say that to remind you is that nobody's going to give us the opportunities that we deserve. We just have to take them. Mm-hmm. Right? That's my response. Take it.
I have a longer response, but I always talk too much anyway. It's a very provocative question. It sort of ties together, you know, the whole panel's question. I was trying to figure out, how do I summarize a four-hour speech? First of all, you have to speak to the history. You have to own the history. And until we talk about the history collectively, and I mean the broader community, the majority community, until we own that history, it's very hard for us to really work together to achieve common goals. And I believe this council has worked very, very hard to acknowledge and to own the history. And I'll just give two quick examples. The first State of the City speech I gave was largely on this history of African Americans in our community. And I thought, at least for the majority community, it started to open up a conversation that frankly should have been had years and years prior, but for reasons hadn't. Number two, a single sentence in the job application for Chief of Police of the Portland Police Bureau, which simply stated the obvious in many people's minds, in my mind, that the police chief would need to have an understanding of the history of race in this community and understand how that history bleeds over into today. And those of you who are here remember it created a firestorm. I mean, it was almost ridiculous. What some people saw as controversial, others, including myself, saw as essential. So we have to keep calling out the history. The second is leadership. As both Commissioner Fritz and Commissioner Hardesty just identified, we will hire the best leaders. And the best leaders at the City of Portland currently include many people from the Black community. Chief Outlaw, the first African-American woman to serve on the Portland Police Bureau, in my estimation, is doing a fantastic job in a really, really difficult job in a difficult environment. Maurice Henderson, who is my first chief of staff, again, one of these sort of outrageous, ridiculous, I can't believe it's so situations, where he was the first Black man to serve as a chief of staff to a mayor in the city of Portland in its entire history. Cyrilda Summers McGee, who heads up all of the HR operations for the city of Portland, and many, many others. Inclusion. I actually love the fact that everyone on this city council works really, really hard to include people, not only people of color generally or underserved communities generally, but with a lot of interest focused on the youth voice. Last question asked about housing, and it asked about safety. It had asked about economic prosperity. One of the most important community engagement committees we have right now is around police reform and public safety. And we deliberately put two positions on that board. They are full voting positions for two young people. We currently have two young folks serving in those positions. Those positions will rotate. If the people have an interest in that, we're certainly interested. Two quick other just sort of last wrap-up points. One of the ways you avoid this question of gentrification is by being proactive. And while there are things we are doing in East Portland to be proactive against gentrification, particularly on the housing front, the Southwest Corridor is the first large public transportation project that will come before this city council, where we as a council have already said through resolution, we will not invest in the transportation infrastructure unless there is an intentional anti-displacement job opportunity and housing strategy to keep the lower income people who are there today there permanently. And that's, I think, been largely well received. Finally, what ties this all together for me, how do you keep people of color in Portland? You keep them here through shared economic prosperity. They feel that they have worked hard and they have been justly compensated for the effort and the blood, sweat, and tears that they've put into this community. And that's why we've been pushing programs like the Portland Means Progress program, where we are getting young people, particularly from historically underserved communities, into jobs. We are focusing on our business community and encouraging them to work with women and minority entrepreneurs to help them grow their business operations. And last but not least, we're getting them to commit to bring really younger kids in as well-paid interns to get them exposed to some of the opportunities that they could have in the community and then connect them to the job training or to the educational opportunities they need in order to be successful in those careers if they're inspired so to do. So there's a lot of work that this council has ahead of us in addition to the work that we've already been undertaking.
So I prefer to let the mayor wrap up, but I don't want to not participate in this conversation. I'll just throw four things out there really quickly that I'm interested in and involved in. One is how we spend our public dollars. Our utilization rates of women and minority contractors for public projects have been abysmal. They are slightly better. They need it needs a lot of work. So that's an area that I'm committed to and something meaningful through PBOT, because we spend a lot of money and we hire a lot of contractors. Two is PCEF, the Portland Clean Energy Fund, presents us with an incredible opportunity I hate it when I say the same word two times in a row, creates a huge potential for increasing economic opportunity in communities of color. The Office of Civic Life and Prosper Portland both have initiatives specifically targeting entrepreneurs of color that I will continue to champion. And the final one, the one I'm most excited about telling you about today, is the Rose Quarter I-5 plan. Public comment is about to open up through ODOT. I would love for massive participation in that. The focus has been on an improvement to the highway, but what I really want the community to focus on is what we can do on those surface streets, and what we can do is begin to stitch Lower Albina back into the broader community, and there's just an incredible opportunity there. And your voices should be at the forefront of that conversation.
Thank you all. I'd like everyone, but especially our commissioners, to join me in thanking the panel of young folks who have taken time out to be here.
Back again to close us out. Thank you so much, Mayor and Commissioners, for having us here today. This group of young people is awesome and amazing. We had a mission to present you with some representative voices of Black youth under 25, 25 and under, to tell their stories. So thank you for listening, and thank you for engaging with them on their comments. As we close out, I want to give a couple comments before we kick it back to the Mayor and Commissioner Hardesty to read the proclamation. I want to thank the community partners who identified and nominated these young people to speak to us. So Self Enhancement Inc., Central City Concern, Black Community of Portland, Black Male Achievement, and World Center Stage. They represent the type of partnerships that we want to strengthen across our city. So thank you so much for your support of our effort today. This is really, for me, a full circle moment, because as I was a young leader here in Portland organizing, I actually was introduced to Commissioner Hardesty through the NAACP when I was active with the NAACP Youth Council and then established the chapter at Portland State University. So awesome and amazing that I can now open the space and opportunity for other young voices to come forward, but also that I get to do it in the presence of someone that did it for me. Thank you so much. And on that note, you know, CAN definitely wants to honor and celebrate the fact that we do have our first African-American commissioner woman sitting on this council. So we want to be a resource to you and all of you in support of the Black employees of the city of Portland, but also just in support of your tenure. So please let us know how we can be of service. I want to quickly just shout out all of the events that we have going on for Black History Month. We're working in concert with a number of organizations in the community and also a number of bureaus across the city. The first set of events, the next set of events that we have going on is this Friday, February 1st. From 12 to 1 p.m., we'll be hosting a Bike Town bike ride launching from here at City Hall. We'll be traveling through downtown, going to Chinatown to support Deadstock Coffee, which is a African-American owned coffee shop in Chinatown. So we'll be riding there and back. And then later that afternoon, we'll be partnering with Nike on an event. They're a partner with our Bike Town program, and they'll be unveiling their Black History Month design of their bikes. And so you'll see those floating around the city, but Friday will be the first opportunity to see them. We, on February 18th, on President's Day, are working with World Stage Theater to host a professional development event. So that's Monday, February 18th. They'll have an all-day event, and we'll have some CAN-specific events that evening for professional networking. On February 24th, Sunday, February 24th, we're partnering with the Parks, the teen program at Montevilla Community Center. We're hosting a Black Family Festival and City Resource Fair. So we have positioned many city bureaus to be there tabling, to be offering information about the services and programs that they have to offer. We'll also be hosting workshops with the Bureau of Human Resources and Procurement about how to get jobs at the city and how to do business with the city. And then lastly, on February 26th, every year we try to highlight one of our partner organizations. So we'll be going to Self Enhancement Inc. That morning to hear about how they are transitioning as an organization into an African American cultural center. So it's an opportunity for city staff and other community members to join us to learn more about how we can partner with that organization. So that is it from us. After this, we invite all of the community members present to join us downstairs. We'll have a reception at City Hall that is generously supported by the mayor and Commissioner Hardesty. We'll have information about all of our upcoming events and some information about CAN and signing up for our email list. We also have an active Facebook page where everyone can RSVP for these events. So with that, I will turn it back over to the mayor, and I do want to flag that for our youth speakers, we are going to have a framed copy of the proclamation. So we'll get signatures from all the commissioners for this, and we will get it to our folks. And our thanks for joining us today, and so you can remember your time here.
So I'm going to say this now because I'll forget to say it otherwise. At the end of the reading of the proclamation, could we get a photograph up front here, Irene, with you and with our youth? That would be a lot of fun if we could do that. So in honoring Black History Month, it's traditional that we read a proclamation on the part of the city of Portland. And, of course, as has been noted, this is an especially historic time as our city has elected our first African-American city commissioner, Commissioner Hardesty.
Woman.
What did I say?
You said first African-American.
Oh, I'm sorry. First African-American woman. That is correct. No disrespect meant to Commissioner Jordan. He was also an amazing and important leader here in our city. And Mr. Bogle, Commissioner Bogle. Anybody else want to add anything else before I continue? All these important people, but the important thing is Commissioner Hardesty's right here now. So this is the progress, the kind of progress that must be noted and must be celebrated. And as such, it's my honor to have Commissioner Hardesty introduce and read the city's Black History Month proclamation on behalf of the Portland City Council. Commissioner Hardesty, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. It is my pleasure. Whereas the City of Portland takes pride in joining Americans throughout the country and recognizing February 2019 as Black History Month. And whereas Black History Month pays tribute to the contributions that African Americans have made to American history and their struggles for freedom and equality, and deepens our understanding of our shared history. And whereas the theme of 2019, Black Migration, honors those of African descent who move to new destinations and new social realities. While inclusive of earlier centuries, this theme emphasizes the 20th century through present day. And whereas many African American families migrated to Portland and the greater Pacific Northwest to seek employment, escape violence, and pursue the American dream. And whereas these individuals and families, their children, and those who have followed them are important members of the Portland community and have helped shape it into the more diverse an inclusive community we know today. And whereas people of African birth and African descent continue to migrate to Portland and the greater Pacific Northwest, and whereas our diverse cultures enriches and broadens the American experience, of which Black heritage is an inseparable part as it weaves throughout our country's history, profoundly influences